Welcome to the Breakthrough Success Podcast, helping you achieve that breakthrough you've always been looking for in your business. And now your host, Mark Gubertzi.
Hello and welcome. I'm your host, Mark Gubertzi, and this is the podcast for marketers and small business owners who are looking for the breakthrough for their businesses. I am very excited about this show. For episode 64 of the Breakthrough Success Podcast, we are going to talk about becoming a high-performance investor with our guest, Ryan Moffitt. Ryan is the lead manager of the Black Peer Atlas portfolio of strategies, spending the last 12 years specializing, designing, and trading robust systems and strategies. In those 12 years, he has worked with and been mentored by traders out of the CBOE, as well as alternative hedge fund managers out of New York and California. Prior to managing Black Peer Capital, he worked for Martin & Company, a $2 billion investment firm, as well as Gulfstream Capital, an alternative investment advisor with $40 million in assets. And now it is my pleasure to welcome Ryan to the show.
How you doing, Mark? Good to be here.
Ryan, it's a pleasure to have you here, and I really look forward to taking a deep dive into high-performance investing, but I'd like to get some backstory first. So why did you get into investing in the first place?
Well, that's a pretty interesting story. And it kind of takes place about 16 years ago. And kind of before that, you know, I came from an athletics background. I ended up playing baseball in college, played at the University of Tennessee. And so very competitive based. That's really what I love is competition. But kind of when I got out of school, I got more into land development and sales. And so I actually continue to work with these guys in a certain aspect as well. But at that point, I knew it really wasn't my be all end all. And so this was pre-2008. So if you can imagine land development or any sort of real estate pre-08, especially in the 04, 05 type mentality, there's going to be, we were obviously in a real estate bubble. So everything was blowing and going. Everybody was making a ton of money that was really in the industry. And I was kind of in that mainstream as well. And really what I did was me and a partner left that company we were working with in land development, and we decided we could kind of do it on our own. We really didn't have a plan on what we wanted to do, you know, but we were in the industry and we're making lots of money, so how could it go wrong? So we left there, me and a partner, and we got into, you know, other types of real estate and bought apartment buildings and bought houses and got into stuff that was really kind of way over our head when it came to execution of getting these things done the right way. So we were so used to everything going right, because obviously we were in a real estate bubble, that, you know, the execution part of it wasn't, you know, the big deal. So we kind of got into a spot where we're in overhead, and we poured a lot of our own money into it. And I poured a lot of my money that I've made over the past few years into it. And really, you know, the real estate crash ended up happening in that scope, and pretty much kind of drained everything we had and everything I had. And it was a huge, huge failure, to say the least, when it came to that. I mean, we were bleeding red when it kind of money flowing out. And I think a big part of that is we didn't have a really good plan. And you can have the greatest idea in the world, but if you can't execute on that idea, it really doesn't do you much good. So it really was one of the low points in my life. I at that point had a wife, had a 6-month-year-old son. And what I did is really had to make some choices. And what I really kind of looked at was I really enjoying what I was doing? And the answer was no, I wasn't. I was literally just doing it for the money. And I wasn't enjoying it whatsoever. So I had what I call a park bench day, where literally that day was an incredibly terrible day. And I went and sat and I started to think, okay, well, what do I want to do with my life? To where, you know, even if I'm not making, you know, as much money as I want to, at least I'm doing what I enjoy or what I love or have passion for. So, you know, fortunately I have a wife that's incredible, and talk to her, and she really kind of pointed me in a direction of, you know, she was telling me, well, you read old finance books for fun. All you read about is hedge fund managers and investments and investing and trading and all these books that no one reads in the right mind, but you do. Why don't you get into that? And so, you know, from my standpoint, I grew up in Tennessee. You know, there aren't hedge funds around the corner in Tennessee. So it's one thing in my mind that, yes, I would love to do it, but I, you know, quote unquote, I couldn't do it because I wasn't located in the right place, you know, New York, Chicago, you know, Tokyo, London, whatever. And so for the longest time, I just didn't think that was an option until she kind of put it out there. And then at that point, something clicked in my head and said, well, you know, this is something I want to do. And then I actually saw a documentary, and I remember it like it was yesterday. It was an old PBS documentary on Paul Tudor Jones. It's called Traitor. And when I saw that documentary, and it covers PTJ in 1986, and he's actually preparing for the crash in 87. And it's the most incredible documentary, seeing someone that has so much passion in what they do, also his philanthropy, and seeing what type of guy that is, has so much energy that it crystallized exactly what I wanted to do with my life. And that's when I knew what I wanted to do. And that was about 15 years ago. So that was a while ago. But that's really kind of what crystallized, really what I probably knew growing up. I always loved trading and finance kind of growing up, but never gave as much credence to it because, again, being from Tennessee, it's something that is not kind of around your world. But then once it happened, I made a decision up my head, and that's what I was going to do with my life. And that's kind of the spark of it.
Ryan, thank you for sharing with us how you got started. And it was really like, I wasn't around as an investor or like even paying attention during the time leading to the recession. I was just too young at that point, but it seemed really easy at that time. And then the recession hit, and throughout all that experience, you learned about becoming a better investor, especially when you decided to focus on your own hedge funds. And I'm wondering, how did you learn to become a high performance investor? What does that learning process look like?
I mean, learning as really a high performance investor trader is no different than being a high performance athlete or high performance in any industry. And it's putting in your time, but it's also getting around people that you want to be like, or that are doing the things that you want to do in the way you want to do them. So one thing that I learned is really getting mentors or getting around people, again, that are doing what I want to do in the way I want to do it. And so for me, again, kind of being where I was, which is not around a lot of, you know, the fun type mentalities, I had to cold call, you know, 50 hedge funds. And, you know, I called them over and over and over and tried to contact them, and only three of them called me back, and two of them still mentoring me this day. So I knew that what I wanted and how I wanted to be wasn't in my kind of local area. So I had to get outside of that. And that was one of the biggest things that I did for myself, kind of create my future, because really working with those guys and understanding how they trade and really standing on their shoulders. And they were extremely generous in what they did. And I did a lot of work with them and for them as well. But really getting around those people that were doing it the right way. And so that was one of the biggest things starting out. And then that really just started the journey. Now, obviously, I've worked with these guys for a long time and been mentored from a lot of different characters, but that was the start of it. I knew I need to fill gaps in my education and to understand the industry. And so, you know, I ended up going back to school, not saying that's exactly what you need to do, but at that time, I felt like I needed to do that, get my MBA, but and also plug some holes in my financial knowledge, but also to see what they're teaching there, because generally most MBA programs are going to be very similar with what they teach, especially within the finance. So if you think about that, if you think about being a trader, one of the biggest parts of being a trader is understanding what the other side thinks and how they think. So it was very interesting for me because I was getting mentored on one end by, you know, pit traders, CBO guys, fund guys. And then on the other hand, getting a more of an institutional background when it came from an MBA. And then I ended up working for an institutional fixed income regional manager, Martin Company. And it was a huge dichotomy to see how both of them looked at the market, but it was extremely wealthy when it came to knowledge of learning the industry, the ins and outs. But again, this is just a slow process. This was, you know, when I started working with these companies, I wanted to do anything possible to learn anything. And so when I came out of school, I had offers to go to different companies, but the lowest offer I got was with Martin Company, but I knew that's where the wealth of knowledge would be. And they were a great firm and they were a smaller firm. So I knew I could learn a lot. And so I took that, you know, and, you know, God bless my wife for actually staying with me through that, because you know, it you know, times can get tough a lot of times when you're changing kind of your industries. But going to that with making sure that I learn with everything I do, and I want to get something out of it, and I want to push forward, and it takes time, and patience isn't one of my best attributes, but it is. It's having that patience in order to grow. So that's kind of the start of it, and learning to kind of be in high performance candidate. But also, again, it's being around the guys that, you know, the traders that I'm around, you know, they weren't looking to make 3 or 4% a year. They needed to make 30 or 40 or 50% a year, because they ate what they killed. And that really mixed in with me, with my competitive nature when it came to sports. And I loved it. You know, I ate it up. And it you know, sometimes it's for your personality, and sometimes it's against your personality. And that was really mixed in well with my personality of being very aggressive, but also very competitive, and just loving it. I mean, it's just no day is a day at work for me, because it's like playing sports for me. So it mixed in well with my background as well.
And with your experience now and you organizing the hedge fund, you've had to make a lot of investments. And with that in mind, when you're looking at a potential investment, what are you looking for to determine whether this is the right investment for you or not?
So one thing that I've really learned kind of over the last 15 years is really you've got to understand where your edge is in the markets or in your trades or in your business, any business, and understand where you are going to be an expert and you are going to know something that most people don't know. And so our firm, and you know, when I say our firm, it's not just me. I've got guys that I work with that are absolutely incredible. And you know, one thing about our firm is, you know, I probably am the least smart around here. The guys, I try to surround myself with guys way smarter than me, and I think I've done that pretty well. So anyways, and what we do is we're very, very specific on what we trade, and we trade broad-based index options on really the broad-based indexes of the S&P 500 and the Russell 2000. And so we're very specific on even how we trade. So we've got 4 or 5 main strategies that we utilize, and day in and day out, our traders generally look at these specific strategies and specific trades. And for our niche, we are the experts in that. So we know our edge within that. And kind of the part we play that our strategies play is with our clients is our strategies do very, very well when really the overall market is, let's say the S&P 500 is going sideways or down or is choppy or is volatile or even grinding up. So our strategies do very well in those times, which most people with a 401k, their portfolios aren't doing well, obviously, when the market's going down or sideways. So a lot of our clients love what we do because they can take a small portion of what they have, and we generally outperform with that. So it acts as a hedge. And just like my mentors, you know, we look to outperform with 20, 30, 40, 50% net returns. And because we do understand our edge and work very, very hard at it day in and day out, we're able to kind of manufacture that within our strategies. So again, very competitive, and something that you have to understand where you stand in the market. And that takes time. That takes quite a bit of time. And one thing I say is, you know, you do have your incredible macro traders out there. But what we're really good at is going very specific and very niche with what we do, and how we do it and why we do it. And really the more niche that we got, the more specific we got, we started really kind of separating ourselves from everyone else, because we serve a specific purpose for our clients and partners. So I think that was one of the biggest learning curves that we had is really developing that edge. And again, we're standing on, you know, my mentors and some of our traders' mentors' shoulders, and really kind of bringing what we have to that, and delineating that just a little bit more as well. So again, kind of a long answer to a short question. So.
And I find it really interesting how you don't just have a plan for doing good during the good times, because that's easy. Like in a bubble, it's really easy to do well, like before the bubble pops. But you even have a plan for doing well when the market isn't as good. And with the intention of like the idea that the market can be good and then it could suddenly become bad. Some people, like one of the arguments against this type of investing, is some people see it as gambling, and you have this more narrowed down to the point where you have an very strong idea of how it's going to play out. So how do you plan for those bad cycles and increase your chances of picking the good investments?
So, and I'm glad you brought that up because that's a fantastic point. So any good trader, you're going to consistently and constantly look at the downside. Where can I get hurt? So a lot of people, when they get into investing, they focus on how much they can make. And if you cover your downside, your upside will take care of itself. Now with us and our strategies struggle when the overall markets go straight up. So if there's very low volatility and the market goes straight up, that's where our strategies struggle. Obviously, that's when most people's 401ks or stocks, that's when they do very, very well. So again, that's why a lot of people utilize us within their portfolio. But when we look at our strategies, you know, we are only a performance-based firm. So generally, if our clients and partners don't make money, we don't make money. We do that in order to fully align our incentives with their goals, and we have our money with their money. So everything is fully aligned. And because of that, you know, if somebody's putting their money on the line, you've got to make sure and look at every single thing that can happen, good, bad, or indifferent. So looking at every single market environment that possibly can happen, you know, we kind of delineate market environments in five different environments, a market that can crash down, a market that can grind down, a market that can go sideways, a market that can grind up, and a market that can pretty much crash up or scream to the upside. Really, those are about five different market environments that can happen when obviously we're in a trade or we're in the market. So we've got to have something within our portfolio that covers one of those or many of those market environments. And as a portfolio, we need to make sure that we have all those market environments covered. You know, what's pretty interesting about a lot of people is they try to cover everything in the market with one trade or one strategy. And I mean, they try to find something that is going to do well all the time. And that just isn't the case. You can't find that. Now, what you can do is you can put a portfolio of strategies together in order to cover those market environments and allocate them in a way that gives you the risk reward that you want. And that's what how we view everything is through risk, reward, and probability. Everything to us is generally going to be some sort of a math problem. And unfortunately, a lot of people don't see the markets that way. But really, that's really all it is going to be probability of something happening or not happening or the risk reward you have. So we want to make sure if we're risking one, then our reward's going to be at least one, if not two, three, or four, in order to make sure the probability of us, obviously, in the long term doing very, very well is very, very high. So, you know, when you talk about gambling and some of the things we've seen in the market, yes, we understand there's a lot of traders out there. And how they go about it probably is akin to gambling. But the way we go about it, just like anything else, just like NASA, if they're going to send somebody to space, they're going to look at every single scenario they can in order to make sure that person is covered in every single scenario to get them to space and back safely. That's how we view our investing. That's how we view our strategies in trading. We do that through quantitative research. We do that through we have all kinds of data going back decades and decades in order to cover all types of environments, in order to understand how our strategy is going to work in the good times and the bad times. So again, it's a lot of research, but it's just viewing everything as how am I going to get hurt, and putting together a portfolio that covers pretty much any situation you can think of.
One of the things I've heard people do very often is they'll read newspapers and magazines in the financial areas, so like one of them being like the Wall Street Journal. And there are a lot of headlines. Some of them are like, this stock's doing really well. Others, this stock is not doing well. But sometimes there's a certain stock that beats expectations or goes below expectations. So If you read financial news and that's like one of your focuses, how are you determining the difference between false hype and this is real?
So the way we view the market is through what the market tells us. We don't ever really look at the headlines. We don't read about the news. We don't watch CNBC or Fox News. We don't look at all that because that has nothing to do. It's very separate from what the actual market is doing. And if anyone's making a determination off the headlines, first of all, they're late to the party. The move's already happened. And so that goes back to knowing your edge and understanding your edge. And if you want to know how a market is going to react to the headlines, don't read the headlines, watch the market. And so the market's never wrong. It's always going to do what the market's going to do, regardless of headlines. And what's very interesting is a lot of times you'll see a market move, and then the headlines the next day will try to figure out why something happened. Well, to us, we don't care why something happened. We just need to understand it did happen. And obviously, kind of with that prior question, what I talked about is we should have already thought of everything that could happen within the market, obviously within the five market scenarios. So it shouldn't be a surprise to us. We should have something that covers that event or that type of market environment. And so again, that goes back to having a quote unquote portfolio and thinking about literally anything that could happen within the market and see how your portfolio reacts to that. And, you know, a lot of times people think, oh, well, you know, you can't have a 40% crash in a day. Well, just because it hasn't happened doesn't mean it could happen. But what would happen if we did have a 40% crash in a day? How would your portfolio do? And this is stuff that we constantly test our portfolios against. We try to constantly break our strategies, constantly poke holes in them. And so that's where we spend our time throughout the day, weeks, months, is not reading the news and not looking at headlines, but digging into our own portfolios and trying to break them and obviously making sure that they're within our parameters of how they should act within current market environments. So we kind of break down our strategies of our different strategies will do well in different market environments. And as long as they're acting like they need to in each market environment, and that's why we have a portfolio of strategies to cover all five market environments, then we're just fine. Obviously, we're going to continue to do research to create new strategies and also try to break the ones we already have. And that's, you know, what our partners and clients, that's what they use us for. That's what we do a day in and day out. So kind of, again, to answer your question is headlines are, you know, they're always going to try to figure out why something happened. It's always going to be a day late and a dollar short. So if anybody is wanting to dig into actually what market events are happening, watch the market, you know, watch the futures market, watch the options market. If you see a big event coming up, which is very interesting, this is kind of, you can tell a trader because they're going to view an event through how the market reacts. So let's take, you know, the Trump election, which is a very interesting anomaly because you had anybody that was trading through that knew when Trump started to win that night, that Tuesday night, futures sold off like crazy. I mean, the S&Ps were down about 100. And then as it got kind of confirmed that he was going to be president, people started figuring out what that meant possibly to the economy. And so you start the futures react and they start going the other way. And then the next day the market's up and the next day it's up big and the next day it's up even bigger. So if you're thinking about headlines, what's the headline going to be? That the market likes it or dislikes it? And so that's why you never really want to pay attention to headlines. You want to see exactly what the market's doing and react in that fashion.
That is a very interesting analysis. And I mean, I usually do my research by looking at those financial articles, but I mean, you're absolutely spot on with that idea of focusing more on the market, because all those stories, they are going to be late because you got to discover the story, got to get someone to write about it, and the story has to get published. So there are a lot of things that happen before the story gets published. So I really love that approach, and you've made a lot of investments. I mean, I'm not sure if you have an official record of how many you've made, but there are some people who are listening to this right now who have not made a single investment. So how do you recommend people dive into their first investment?
Well, I mean, you know, investing is very interesting because there's 10,000 ways to skin a cat. So, you know, you've got, that's what you got to love about this industry is, you know, how we make money is, you know, we trade options on the indexes and we do it a certain way. And I've got friends and traders and hedge fund managers that do it a completely different way. And they're incredibly good at what they do. So, you know, one thing I would always tell kind of young traders or new traders is really figure out what really acts with your personality. And what I mean by that is, you know, a lot of people think, you know, I would love to day trade. Well, have you ever tried to sit in front of your computer all day, every day, trying to pull money from the market? It takes a certain personality to do that. And so understanding that, or if someone's wanting something maybe a little bit more long term. And so one great thing about this is you can set up accounts, you can paper trade, and you don't have to risk your money. And so that's how I would definitely start, is start small and read all you can. I think I've read about 600, 650 books on financing, trading, and all types of different methods, and experiment. I mean, you know, it takes a long time. Just like if you're going to be a doctor or a lawyer or any other industry, it takes a long time to learn those professions, and it should, because it's a lot of knowledge that you have to accumulate and a lot of experience. And so just like a law degree will take 3 years, or, you know, your medical degree will take 4 years and residency, you know, that's how, if you're going to think about trading or trading for a living, that's exactly the type of mentality you need, that, okay, if I'm just getting started in this, I need to quote unquote go to school. And I'm not saying you need to enroll in school, but you need to start the education of learning and not thinking about making a bunch of money, because that's going to come later. Just like if you're a brand new student in med school, you're not going to think about doing a brain surgery that day because you're not there yet. It's going to take years before you get there. So we always tell young traders is just kind of pull it back, slow it down, and give yourself, take all pressure off yourself and just learn and have fun doing it. Experiment with different types of trading, trade futures, trade options, trade bonds, trade currencies. Do it in different time frame. Do super long term, do day trading, and figure out what you like. And you know, once you start getting in your niche and something that mixes with your personality, it's amazing how quickly the learning curve starts to speed up and you start to really kind of get into a rhythm. And again, another thing is, you know, utilize people around you. And one thing I did is reached out to mentors. Again, I had to cold call 50 mentors, and it wasn't like I called them once either. I had to continue trying to get a hold of them, but I knew that that's what I wanted to do. So really reach out to people. You know, anybody listening, definitely you can reach out to us at Blackpear. We love to help any way we can when it comes to helping new traders out or giving advice in that realm. So that's what I'd say. Start small. Take any pressure off of you of trying to do this for a living very quickly, and just learn and learn to love it and find what mixes with your personality.
Ryan, thank you for sharing with us those insights regarding making that first investment, because that's a really big moment for many people, especially when it comes to putting their money into something and seeing if it will grow. And one of the questions I love to ask is, for a big challenge you faced in your journey and a powerful lesson you learned, the recession obviously being a really big challenge. So do you want to just build upon that and share another powerful lesson you learned from it, or share a different challenge that you've had to face on your journey?
Well, I think that was one of the in really failing forward. One thing I want to put out there is failing is necessary. It is. You know, in the trading world, a lot of people hate to lose, and no one likes losing money, but losing is part of the process. And so when you start understanding that failing and losing, that's just part of the process, it gets a little easier to do, and you start failing quicker, which means you're putting yourself out there and pushing yourself even harder, which is fantastic. So, you know, one lesson that I learned, and I wish I learned it a long time ago, is push yourself hard and don't be afraid to fail. You know, I've got two young boys, and that's what I really want them to learn, is put yourself out there. Don't be afraid to make a fool of yourself. Don't be afraid to fail, because that's where you're going to learn. People don't win or learn on their winning trades. They learn on their losing trades. And so kind of like you mentioned with the recession, you know, that's really where I, again, kind of had your park bench moments. That's where the learning's done. And one thing I really learned was how incredibly important execution is. The execution of an idea and walking through the execution of an idea and making sure that really how the execution is done is something that you want to do. So I'll give you an example. When we got into, you know, buying apartment buildings, you know, with me, I loved putting together the model and, you know, hey, we're going to get this at a certain cap rate and we're going to buy this. And when we sell it, it's going to be fantastic. We'll make this amount of money. One thing I didn't walk through is the day-to-day work and execution of the idea that needed to be done in order to make that plan work. And so what I found is a good plan executed perfectly is way better than a great plan that's executed poorly. And so walking through a plan and making sure that you've got the steps and you walk through and see, again, just like any trade plan, is how can this go wrong, and make allowances for that, but also walk through and make sure it's the work you want to do. Because what we got into is we got into a case where we got into apartment buildings, and the last thing I really wanted to do was be a landlord. And once I got into that and figured out what that was, I hated it. I couldn't stand it. And so, of course, if I'm in a job that I hate and I don't want to do it, obviously I'm probably not going to do it that well. And that's really what started the ball into kind of rolling downhill, which led to where we were with literally just kind of losing our shirts on that, because it wasn't managed well, it wasn't executed well. So the big thing, anytime we look at a new business venture or a new type of strategy, can we execute it? And can we execute it to a scale we need to? So one of the challenges now for us is we're scaling up. So we're getting a lot of new capital. And so generally with certain strategies, you know, sometimes certain strategies work with a low amount of capital, but may change with a higher amount. So we've got to make sure that we can scale these and make sure the execution is continues to be flawless. And so, again, that's one of the biggest things I've learned is ideas are great and great ideas are even better, but making sure you have the team in place to execute them and make sure that it's done, again, just like any trade plan where you're making sure you're giving allowances and walking through that to see the worst thing that can happen and making plans for that. So it's one of the biggest lessons I learned, and I continue. It's really shaped the way that kind of Blackpear has been run and Blackpear has been shaped. So I think that helped me out the most. I wish I learned it the easy way, but unfortunately that's usually not how we learn. So I had to learn it the hard way, but it's definitely ingrained in me at this point.
Ryan, thank you for sharing with us that challenge and the powerful lesson you learned during that challenge. And a while ago you mentioned that you have read hundreds of books on investing, and as a true bookworm that I am, I'm wondering if you could share with us three books that had a really big impact on you in your investing journey, and because that would really help us get on the right path even beyond this episode.
Oh, wow. Three books. Wow. That's a tough one. One thing is there's all kinds of different books. If you're flat out just looking for like trading books, I mean, you've got your classics, you've got your Market Wizards, the original Market Wizards. That's always a classic. Reminiscence of a Stock Operator, a complete classic with Jesse Livermore. How I Made $2 Million in this, I believe it's How I Made $2 Million in the Stock Market. Those three are just kind of classic trading books. You know, with all the books I've read, and what's very interesting about trading is a lot of the books that are incredible books that help with trading have nothing to do with trading. And you can go to our blog at blackpearcapital.com, and we kind of write a lot of blog pieces, kind of some of our earlier blog pieces on some of the ideas that we get from some of the books. And if anybody wants to email us or at Blackpear, we can definitely kind of give a more of a larger list of some really good books. Off the top of my head, I know I'm missing some great books, but you know, a lot of times it's the books that really have nothing to do with finance or trading that have the most impact when it comes to process. And I haven't mentioned that much, but process is one of the biggest things that we've learned kind of through obviously reading all these books, but also through being able to scale a company, is making sure that it's process driven. And with trading, any type of investing, you know, it's just like, I came from a baseball background, and in baseball you can be wrong 7 out of 10 times and be an all-star. And trading is not that different. So you have to be very, very process driven, because failure is constantly happening. You're constantly going to fail, but what you want to make sure is your average is very, very good. So that's what's the nice thing about baseball along with trading, is if your process is sound and you've got good foundation for your process, then over the long term you're going to do very, very well. And that's going to have a bunch of losses involved with it. But just like baseball, If you're wrong 7 out of 10 times, meaning you're batting 300, you'll end up in the Hall of Fame. And so those type of things, I think I've learned a lot from the books. Again, I wish I off the top of my head could think of a few more. But you know, if you're talking about just flat out trading books, you know, the Market Wizards books, that covers, I think, 6 of those guys in the Market Wizards books are now billionaires. So you kind of get a sense of some greatness there. Then Reminiscence of Stock Operators, a fantastic journey of Jesse Livermore, really coming from bucket shops to one of the most seasoned and best traders, and really in the early 1900s. So those are two really good trading books. They have got great stories to them. So I think those would be good places to start.
Ryan, thank you for sharing those great book recommendations. And you've mentioned Black Peer Capital and the blog. And before I give you a chance to mention that a little more and some of the other things you're doing, I've asked you a lot of questions. And I'm wondering, what is one question we need to be asking ourselves more often?
Oh, that's a fantastic question. I mean, the one question that we always ask ourselves here is, where are we wrong? What are we missing? And, you know, I think just as human beings, we want to be right. Obviously, no one wants to be wrong. We want to succeed. And what we've really found is, again, if you cover your downside and you try to pretty much poke holes in everything you're doing and you shore that up and make an incredible foundation, the upside always takes care of itself. And I think that's the case with all parts of life. And two, any time that you're asking yourself, where can you be wrong, you almost step outside yourself emotionally and you're a little bit more clear-headed on what you're looking at. So you're always going to have biases on whatever you're looking at because everything's filtered through emotions and filtered through past experiences. So anytime that you step back from that and take the other side of it and think about, where am I wrong, or where can this break, or where are the holes in this, I think you get a little bit clearer picture on what's going on, whether that's an argument with your wife, whether that's an investment or a decision for a business. I think if you cover the downside, your upside will take care of yourself. And again, it's one thing that you want to make sure that the risk that you're putting out there, that you have the reward for it. So kind of like I mentioned with any of our trades or investments, you know, we're constantly looking for good risk reward. And when you think about it in that nature, again, just because you're mentioning the word risk, you're thinking, where am I going to lose here? And what am I gaining for putting out this type of risk? And so, you know, just like a lot of people, you know, they'll go out and buy Apple Computer. Well, Apple Computer, if it goes out of business or whatever, will, you know, their stock will go to zero. Well, if people are thinking that way, well, okay, if it can go to zero, what am I making on the upside to compensate me for that? And just thinking about it in that form and fashion of risk reward and where can I be wrong, it just gives a more clear picture of what's going on with that investment or that situation. And I think those questions are very good questions to ask yourself, I think, in any situation.
Ryan, thank you for giving us the great questions that we should be asking ourselves. And now we'll get to the point that I hinted to earlier. You've shared all these great insights with us throughout this episode. And for listeners who want to know, where can we find you on the web?
You can find us at blackpeercapital.com, so www.blackpeercapital.com. And we've got our blog on there. So on our blog, we're going to have we've got videos of some of our traders, got Tyler and Wayne on there. We've got some podcasts that we've been on as well, but always also have some pretty good articles. So we read a lot and we take a lot from different books. So we put kind of ideas that we found from, you know, our friends that are incredibly successful and really that don't just pertain to trading. So I would definitely want people to go visit our blog if they want to, and they can contact us if they like at info@blackpeercapital.com. All that is forwarded to me from our team. So I'll pretty much read anything there. And I think if anyone has any comments, definitely shoot us an email or has any questions about investing. Again, we love to help out. You know, I wouldn't be where I am without the help, and my team wouldn't be where they are without help. So we understand if anyone has any ideas on investing, succeeding, whatever, we'd love to help out any way we can. So that's where you can find us.
All right, Breakthrough Success listeners, you can get those links and the rest of the show notes at markgaberti.com/E64. Ryan, it was a pleasure to have you on the Breakthrough Success podcast.
I was glad to be here. I hope I added some value. So it was great to be here, Mark. Thank you.
To never miss an episode, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on whatever player you are using. If you are a regular listener and haven't done so already, I would greatly appreciate it if you could give this podcast a review or a rating. Two ways you could do this are through markgaberti.com/iTunes or markgaberti.com/Stitcher. That ends this episode. Don't forget, dream big, achieve greatness, and unlock your potential today. Want your tweets to get retweeted to my 360,000 Twitter followers? All you have to do is say something nice about the Breakthrough Success Podcast and include the link markgubery.com/iTunes. Once you've posted that tweet, email me mark@markgubery.com and I will retweet your tweet to my 360,000 followers.
This podcast is a production done by Mark Gubery. For more insights, head on over to markgubery.com.